KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland.
Hello from South Berkeley, below Ashby.
Coming up, why Facebook wants to help build a train across the Bay.
It would be for the public, not just Facebook employees. But Facebook will still have a pretty large influence on how it's built and who it serves.
Then a new exhibit showcases the righteous rage of feminist art.
We are empowering the artists and the writers. We are standing together, and we are not going to be silent.
And we'll hear how one man in prison turned his life around by pulling strings, literally.
Crochet is very forgiving. All you have to do is pull on a string, go back to where you made your mistake, and just redo everything all over again. You don't have to throw away the yarn.
Life lessons from Solano State Prison and more coming up on Cross Currents. Every morning, the Dumbarton Bridge is choked with tech workers commuting from the East Bay to Silicon Valley. Right next to that bridge is an old rail line that's been defunct for almost 40 years. Now, there's serious talk about rebuilding that rail crossing for commuters, and the company that might pay to make that happen? Facebook. KLW's transportation reporter, Eli Wirtschafter, is now joining me in studio. Hi.
Hey.
So, Eli, are you talking about those old rickety structures sticking out of the water by the Dumbarton Bridge?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Those trestles, that sort of frame of an old bridge off to the right as you drive across the Dumbarton Bridge from Palo Alto to Newark.
I know them so well because I drive by those all the time.
Really?
And yeah, so, and when I'm with my kids, we have a name for it.
What's your name?
We call it the Ghost Bridge.
No way.
Yeah. It looks creepy. It is very creepy. So we're always like, what is that? So Eli, what is that?
Well, it's the remains of the very first bridge to ever cross the bay. It was built way back in 1910.
And was it meant to carry people or freight or what?
Oh, well, in the first couple of years, it had both passengers and freight. But for most of its history, it was carrying cargo. And that lasted for a long time, all the way into the 80s.
And what happened then?
In the 80s, the Port of Oakland started taking more and more container ships, and that meant less cargo coming across the bay from San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, the rail bridge was discontinued. And then in 1998, there was a fire that burned down almost a third of a mile of the bridge. So nowadays, it's just sitting there as this kind of ruin.
Okay. So is this realistic, though, to reopen that bridge as a passenger rail bridge? Because, like I said, I've seen it. It looks old. I wouldn't get on it. It doesn't look like it could hold up a train.
They would definitely have to rebuild large parts of it and retrofit the parts that are already there. It's a big project. But regional planners have actually been saying since the 2000s that this is something that the region needs. It's actually not such a crazy idea. There just hasn't been the money for it in the past.
So now transit agencies have a new proposal, and it's backed by Facebook. What do they want to build?
They want to build a rail line, basically to run parallel to the Dumbarton Bridge from Newark to East Palo Alto and then to the Redwood City Caltrain station.
Mm-hmm.
And the proposal is to then extend it up to the Fremont ACE station and the Union City BART station in later years.
Okay, Union City, that's my hood. So I could actually take this thing.
Yeah.
If I was going to Palo Alto, how much would it cost to ride it?
To be determined, but planners are assuming it would be similar to Caltrain, so something like $6 to $8 at today's rates.
Okay, so, but how will this reduce cars on the road overall? Because unless commuters have a way to get to the rail station, they might just be driving to those spots.
Right. Getting commuters to the stations is a real concern, and already parking fills up really quickly in the morning at BART stations and Caltrain stations in that area. So it'll be important to have other shuttles, buses, trains, and bike networks connecting up to this system.
Mm-hmm. So this idea of rebuilding that rail line has been around for a while, and then it keeps dying. So what brought it back to life again now?
The main reason now is just the need for it. I mean, if you've ever had the misfortune to be on the Dumbarton Bridge during commute hours going towards Silicon Valley in the morning or coming back to the East Bay, It is awful, and it is only going to get worse as Facebook and these other companies keep growing. Mm-hmm. And it really gets back to how there's been so many jobs added in Silicon Valley and not nearly enough housing to keep up. Like between 2010 and 2014, San Mateo County added 25 times the number of jobs as it added new housing units. Mm-hmm. So that's contributed to the housing shortage, it's contributed to traffic, and it's really biting the companies that created all those jobs in the first place, Facebook, Google, Apple, all the rest, by creating long commutes for their employees.
Right.
So what's changed now is that Facebook wants to be part of the solution to make that commute better for their growing workforce.
Okay. So how has Facebook gotten involved?
It started a few years ago when Facebook gave over $1 million to Samtrans, that's the agency that runs transit in San Mateo County, to study transportation solutions from the Fremont area to the Palo Alto area where Facebook is. And they looked at all sorts of things, improving roads and highways, improving bus service across the bridge, and this idea of creating a rail bridge. Mm-hmm. And what the study said is that they should basically do all of it. Mm. Express lanes on the highways, more and better buses, and this new commuter rail line.
So Facebook helped pay for the study. Will they actually pay for the whole rail system?
Well, that whole rail system plus all those other improvements could cost upwards of $2 billion just to build. Mm-hmm. And it's not clear yet what Facebook's investment will be. They're definitely involved as planners and developers, but how much they fund the project in the future is still up in the air. There are news reports from NBC and CBS that say Facebook could give $1 billion, so about half the total cost. But Samtrans says Facebook hasn't committed to a number. And I emailed Facebook as well. They haven't gotten back to me. So whatever they give, it's not going to be all the costs.
Okay, but how else would it be covered?
Other tech companies could get on board to help pay for it. Uh-huh. But really, a lot of the funding would probably come from government sources, which is to say, taxpayers.
So Facebook is planning to commit to all of this money. What does it expect to get in return?
Well, Facebook would get a better commute for their employees. They might also get more goodwill from local governments and local people who are generally pissed off about what a huge impact Facebook has had on traffic, not to mention housing. Mm-hmm. It's also possible that Facebook could get naming rights either to the system or to individual stations or get advertising on the train.
But would Facebook own the train system?
No, they wouldn't own the system. It would be a public transit service. But the plan is to have a private operator, another infrastructure company called Plenary, that's been coordinating with Facebook and Samtrans to operate it and take some of the income. It would be for the public, not just Facebook employees. But Facebook will still have a pretty large influence on how it's built and who it serves.
Mm-hmm. We already have so many transit systems in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
BART, Caltrain, Muni, they don't link up well. It's hard to transfer. A lot of times it's just a mess. Is this just going to be yet another transit provider in the Bay Area?
Yeah, that's a real concern. There are now 27 different transit operators in the Bay Area.
Wow.
You know, and that's led to poor coordination, bad planning, and a bad experience for commuters.
Yeah.
And because we don't have much of an overarching transit authority, we seem to have no other way to do projects except on this kind of ad hoc basis. Like, Facebook needs a train. All right, we'll give Facebook a train.
Okay, but are there any examples of this anywhere else? A private company helping build public transit?
Well, one example would be Amazon, which put over $1 million into the bus system in Seattle and got better service and advertising space in return. So that's a precedent.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like another example of Bay Area governments failing to provide transportation and then private companies step in, like the Google buses or Lyft and Uber. And now we have the Salesforce Transit Center. Is this just the way things are going to get done now?
Yeah, demand for transportation has definitely exceeded what governments are provided. So if taxpayers aren't willing to invest what transit costs, this is kind of it's like the make Mexico pay solution. If Facebook needs a train for its employees, they can pay for it.
Is anyone opposed to this? Are there any community concerns?
It seems like from the community meetings so far, the response is quite positive from locals really concerned about traffic. Mm. But there are people who are worried about noise or about train tracks cutting through neighborhoods. You know, I think this project could also add to gentrification in East Palo Alto, where one of the stations would be, where there's already been a lot of displacement of longtime residents.
Mm-hmm.
And some people at the meetings had environmental concerns, wanting to make sure the wetlands are protected and that the project is resilient in the event of earthquakes or sea level rise.
So what's next for this project, Eli?
Well, there's going to be more planning and feasibility studies, environmental review, more community meetings. And in the end, it's going to be up to the board of SamTrans to decide whether to go forward on this.
Do we know when this would actually be built?
According to the plan, construction could begin in 2022, pretty soon, with service starting in 2025. So if that actually happens, it'll be before BART finishes a second Transbay crossing, another idea that's becoming more and more of a reality as the traffic gets worse and worse.
As the traffic gets worse. Thank you, Eli.
Thanks, Anna.
Eli Wirtschafter is KALW's transportation reporter. You can reach him at transportation@KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. The Bay Area is a bastion of feminism, so it's fitting that the latest exhibit showcasing feminist ideals and opinions is right here in San Francisco. Fahrenheit 213 is a group art exhibit made by feminist artists and writers, dozens of them from around the Bay and around the country. It spotlights works inspired by feminist protest. The exhibit is co-curated by artist activist Karen Gutfriend. Karen recently sat down with KALW's Janae Darden to share more.
Right after college, I was living in New York City in the late 80s, and just that's when the Guerrilla Girls got started. And I was actually fortunate. I worked at MoMA in the painting and sculpture department, and just all the protests and getting to see, you know, see everything that was going on in that scene. And then also to all the activism that you would see. Everyone was pasting posters all over, you know, the East Village, anywhere, pretty much everywhere. And that pretty much started the spark. And I've been, yeah, doing that ever since.
How was it then as far as women have an opportunity to get their art into museums?
Oh, zero.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say zero. But when you look at the statistics, it's like it just was so, so difficult. I mean, I'm really trying to think, working in, there probably only were five women artists on the wall in the entire collection. And they had a humongous collection.
Really?
I mean, even today, and this is why I think supporting women in the arts is so important, is still today, 85% of museum and art institutions are 85% white male. That gives very little room for artists of color, women artists. You know, we're just an add-on, a little adjunct.
Wow. Has that improved since, you say, maybe the 90s?
Oh, no, no. This is today.
This
is today.
So it was like that then.
Right, it was even worse then. It was probably more 90, 92%. But I'm actually getting very encouraged. You're seeing exhibitions around the country and ones that are coming up that are really highlighting and actually a lot of older women artists, which is amazing because women that have just fabulous artists that got overlooked their entire career and now they're in their 70s or their 80s and they're getting their time in the sun. And I just think that's amazing. Oscar Wilde said art imitates life, and really life starts imitating art, because what happens is when the artists start changing attitudes and ideals, it becomes the new normal. So, you know, things such as, like, think of the NOW movement for AIDS. Now it's like people, you know, embrace that, and it made a huge social change. Even you could go back to the Vietnam War with the image of the little girl who had been bombed and all her clothes burned off, the 9-year-old running down, you know, the napalm girls, what they called her. That imagery really changed people's perceptions, which then changed people's ideals to reach for a better good and make positive change. for this exhibition, we have a curatorial team where we pulled together over 40 women artists and writers that are just outraged about what's going on right now with domestic violence, police brutality, the environment. I could just go on and on. And so what this exhibition is about is protesting the erosion of human rights and civil rights and women's rights of what we have just seen eroding almost as quickly as the icebergs over the last 2 years. And so this exhibition, we wanted to amplify our voices to be heard so we can bring about some change.
It's funny because there's a power in sometimes saying things over and over again,
mm-hmm.
that
yes.
whether it's negative and
right.
you take that in, or definitely if it's positive.
Yeah, like a big saying in our family is don't give power to those words. So whenever someone is, mm-hmm. down or being negative, mm-hmm. it's like don't give power to those words because words matter. That is why we involve the writers in this exhibition, because art can sometimes be, it's conceptual and very, and subjective. And so having them personally respond to it, whether it was like a scholarly write-up or but the best was like prose and poetry, mm-hmm. where it just gave a new perspective to the art. You should never, as an artist, wait for your muse to visit you. You just have to keep working. Just keep working. So just go in my studio, and even just if I'm dabbling on something else, once you put yourself in that space, because I'm such a perfectionist of having it be what is in my head, in my heart, I want it on that canvas.
This theme of the exhibit as far as reaching past the boiling point, mm-hmm. so I'm feeling like anger. Is this exhibit giving women space to be angry?
Oh, absolutely. God forbid you ever shed a tear.
Right.
But if you're too strident, like you can probably hear it in my voice right now, then you're called all sorts of other names I probably can't say on radio.
Oh, right, exactly.
So what we're doing is, with this artwork, it's pulling together righteous rage over what's, each artist did what was most important to them. Although, of course, there's a lot of stuff that's important. But when you can pull into that power, and we are empowering the artists and the writers, we are standing together, we are standing up, and we are not going to be silent because it's gone on long enough. The misogyny, the xenophobia, Islamophobia, and nothing is going to happen if we don't stand up, put a line in the sand, and say, this is not going to be crossed.
That was Karen Goodfriend. She curates the new group art exhibition, Fahrenheit 213, and she spoke with KALW's Janae Darden. The exhibit is showing at the ARC Gallery in San Francisco through May 11th. Find that information at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we're going to go to Solano State Prison in Vacaville for another story from Uncuffed.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Carlos Munoz had been incarcerated for more than 20 years when he finally found his calling. Crochet. He started out in hiding, embarrassed to crochet in front of other men. But over time, Carlos brought his art from behind cell blocks and bunks and into the light of the prison day rooms and the gym. Carlos told Uncuffed producer Spoon Jackson about the wisdom he's learned from his crochet hooks.
One of the things about the more complex projects is that you have to follow instructions. Mm-hmm. If you don't follow instructions, of course, just like our lifestyle, we get in trouble, right? But in crochet, what happens is if I don't follow instructions, my project begins to take a different direction, right? And it begins to shape differently. And that's a principle that I actually share with the guys as well. My name is Carlos Munoz, and I am the coordinator and facilitator of The Rock, Reaching Our Communities Crocheting. When I initially arrived to this prison, Solano State Prison in California, I found myself a lot of idle time. And I began to look for different hobbies And I came across crochet, and that's how I started. I wanted to give a sweater to my mom and my sister. But initially, I was really shy.
Yeah.
I was really shy. I was kind of timid, and I used to hide behind the barracks, behind the bunks, and do it on my own.
And do your crocheting?
Do my crocheting, yes.
So you think there's stigma behind crocheting?
Absolutely. Well, you know, at first I thought that, you know, this is a woman-dominated craft. How can I be doing it in prison, especially, you know, the culture in prison, hyper-masculine environment, an environment full of dominance. So I figured, how am I going to be doing this in here?
Once you got the knack for crocheting, how did that make you feel inside?
It gives me a sense of accomplishment, a sense of self-worth, because I'm learning a skill that I actually kind of was very timid to before. And every project that I completed made me feel a sense of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to introduce this to the rest of the population, because I couldn't be the only one that is feeling this stuff. I never ran a crochet program before. I didn't have a blueprint for it, but because of the benefits that we can reap from this, I said, I have to figure this out. And here we are. I have two classes already set up, 15 to 20 participants in each one. We donate to the Veteran Homes of California, one of the locations is in Yountville, the other one is in West LA.
I know your individuality and your individual art comes out in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you do your individual style.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's very important.
Individual footprint, yeah.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I've looked into the effect of colors, right? What does each color invoke in a person?
Mm-hmm.
And the more brighter and vibrant colors that we come across with, because all we've seen is white and gray,
mm-hmm.
and black, and, you know, darkness, right? Those are the primary three colors that we've seen most of our time in incarceration.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you bring purple and you bring bright yellow and
orange,
purple, you know, right? Orange, yeah. Right? It's very vibrant. It changes the mood, and it could be happiness, it could be joy, it could be peace, it could be love, right? Through red, white, you know, purple, yellow.
Because I know a couple of people that's in the class, and they really enjoying it too. And they come back, and I see them in the day room over there crocheting. I say, yeah, I know Carlos.
Yes. Yeah, you know what? Everybody's came out of those barracks, and they crochet openly in front of everybody else now. And it's amazing for me, because we have actually, at first, people would question themselves and the reputation of prison, of course, and said, you know, I'm going to take this challenge and take the criticism as long as I'm able to give back to my community. One of the people who inspired me to give back has been Ellen DeGeneres, the show.
Ellen DeGeneres?
Ellen DeGeneres.
I always liked her. She cool.
Yes. She finishes off her program as being be kind to one another.
Yeah.
So I began to do that, and it's very powerful. And it's actually healing when you become be kind to somebody else. And the guys learn a lot.
Yeah,
they have learned a lot. It's a very forgiving craft. One of the things that I actually share with them is they make a mistake and they continue on, right? And they come back and they notice their own mistakes in the craft. And I say, you know, one beautiful thing about crochet is all you have to do is pull on the string and redo it all over again.
Mm.
But we have to be mindful of our mistakes.
That's a great metaphor for life, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the thing about crochet is very forgiving, right? All you have to do is pull on a string, go back to where you made your mistake, and just redo everything all over again. You don't have to throw away the yarn. Inmates are now open-minded to the craft, and they're realizing that they've had the wrong perception on what crochet is. I've been incarcerated for 27 years, and I never imagined I would crochet myself. Not in a million years. I didn't even have it in my plan.
It's something that lasts, you know, sort of like a painting or...
Right.
Your so, poem. Yeah.
Absolutely. So a lot of the stillness that the craft demands from a person that crochets is something that an inmate has not experienced in prison, or more so, you know, both worlds on the streets and society and or in prison. I've never been still for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Or experienced tranquility.
Yeah.
Calmness.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what that was.
And you see it in your students when you teach them.
I
the
see
class.
It when they're sitting there for hours trying to create their project. And when they snap out of it, they realize, damn, I'm still in prison. I forgot about it. Right? Yeah. It's time to clean up, guys. And they turn around like, what happened? One of the stigmas that we have in here is that most of us are stuck in our old behavior. And today I can clearly say that we're not. From one day to the next, we went from our criminality to crocheting.
That was Carlos Munoz speaking with Spoon Jackson. Spoon is a student in KALW's radio program at Solano State Prison. It's supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check the content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/uncuffed. And while you're there, make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter. Get all the greatness that is Cross Currents every week right in your inbox. This music is by Mint from San Francisco. They're performing at Bottom of the Hill tomorrow night. Today's Cross Currents team includes Lance Gardner, Priya Mahadevan, Troop Nguyen, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Tariq Foda. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.